I have this tendency that when God speaks into my life and calls me and challenges me with areas that I'm struggling with, or calls me to something that's big, or even calls me to small things to share my faith, or just to be somebody who lives out my faith in certain settings, I have this real tendency that I kind of doubt whether I'm hearing from God, or I come up with excuses, or I find ways that I can run and run away from God instead of running to Him and trusting Him, placing my life in His hands and obeying what He's called me to do. And just like we're going to find in Jonah, often when that happens, my life gets turned upside down and I struggle, and there are storms and there are challenges and there are things that I can't make sense of. But the truth of the matter is, if I just go back and realize this is all coming because I'm acting like Jonah. I'm acting like this guy who heard from God and said, I don't like what you're telling me to do. I'm going to go the other way. And so that's kind of what we're going to be dealing with. But we're doing this series on Jonah for a couple reasons. First of all, it's just a great story. It's a great book. It's a great place for us to get into the scriptures and roll up our sleeves, just kind of walk through it. And I hope that as we walk through the book of Jonah, as you're here, that it will literally be a place where you're challenged, that you will have a lot of fun looking at the story, but you will see the God behind the story. Because even though the book is called Jonah, and the name of the book is about the key character, Jonah is not the key character. The fish is not the key character. This book, just like every book in the Bible, is ultimately about God. See, the Bible is the story of God. It is about Him and how He pursues and He deals and He works in the lives of people. And we can learn from this about who God is and how He interacts with me. And I hope that as you see Jonah, you see yourself, but you will also see a God who is crazy about him, who is pouring into his life and who is working to accomplish His great purpose through the life of Jonah. And as you do that, you'll maybe run into that same God in your own life and figure out how He interacts with you, how He deals with you, how He opens your life to things. And so as we do that, but we also want to look at the book of Jonah because it is a great book to help us as a church deal with our mission. Because ultimately the book of Jonah is about this, that God is a God who is a sending God. God sends His people. When He changes the lives of people, He doesn't do that. He doesn't bless them. He doesn't pour Himself into them just so that they can have a group of people around them that are like them and feel good and sing pretty songs and high-five each other and then go away. When God saves and changes the lives of people, He does it so that He can then pour Himself into others through them. Jonah didn't like that. Jonah really liked the idea of being a Hebrew, a person of Jewish descent, and being with his people. But when God calls him to Nineveh, which is a town that's violent, a town of people that are really far from God, a town of people who have deep issues, a town of people who really are the last person that Jonah wanted to go to, when God called Jonah to that, Jonah went, I don't think so. I'm cool, God, when you want me to speak to people who are like me, who make me feel good about my nationality, my heritage, my culture, my people, people that won't push me too far outside of my bubble. I am fine, God, when you send me to those people. But I'm not okay when you send me to people who aren't like me. And the reason that is sad is because all through the Bible, we find starting in the very first book of the Bible, all through the Bible, that God is a God who sends. And the ultimate picture of this, the ultimate revelation of the fact that God is a God who sends is that He sent Himself, His Son Jesus. In the book of John, which is one of the stories in the Bible about the life of Jesus, at least 15 times Jesus says a phrase like this, "The Father has sent me because..." And He fills in the blank. So He'll say, the Father has sent me to be the good shepherd of the sheep. The Father has sent me to bring life. The Father has sent me to love you. All kinds of things like this. He keeps saying, the Father has sent me. And He fills in the blank. And it's a picture of ascending God. But Jesus' last discussion with His disciples, he turns it a little bit. Because for 3 years, He has been telling these guys, my Father has sent me. My Father has sent me. My Father has sent me. And then He looks at them and He says this, as the Father has sent me, so send I you. And He tells them, listen, I haven't just had you spend this time with me so that you can have a good group of friends and hang out and be close. I have brought you close to me because eventually my mission was to send you just like God sent me. We serve a sending God. We don't want to become as a people, a group of people that just kind of get content with our own church life and our own church culture and our own church people. And we speak the right language and we have these churchy terms that everybody feels good about. And we all understand the same language. And we're all in this together. We want to be a church that understands that we have a sending God who sent somebody to us and that changed us. And now God is sending us. Does that make sense? The book of Jonah helps us deal with that. So even as we're looking at the story this morning, we see Jonah just turning tail and running. You know, hightailing it out of there. You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going the other way. What I want you to understand is that we have a tendency to do that, but God is still ascending God. And Jonah is running from him, will run smack into him. So if you have your Bibles, we're going to turn to the book of Jonah, chapter 1. If you don't have a Bible, we have one at the end of your row. We'd love for you to take that this morning, use that. We will be in that Bible on page 657. And we're going to be talking about Jonah. We're going to kind of read through this whole chapter this morning. We're going to be looking at how Jonah responded to the call of God. Jonah, chapter 1, and we'll begin with verse 1 here. We read the first three verses last week, and so I won't say a whole lot about them, but it just kind of gets us into the story. This is a story. It is a real story. It is a true story. It is a story of how God interacts with people. There's some big things in here, but it's about a miraculous God. And I just, sometime and next week, we'll really get into the fish, what that's all about. But even as we look at that, I want you to understand this is a story about God and how he dealt with this guy and how God used Jonah to pursue several groups of people. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it, for their evil has come up before me." God says, listen, I want you to go to these people. It's Nineveh. In fact, we've kind of done a map up here for you. It might be hard for you to see, but hopefully you can see enough of it. Joppa down here on the bottom right-hand corner is a seaport that I'm going to read about in just a minute, but it is in Israel. It is in, you know, it's actually, if you were to pick up a modern-day map of Israel, the seaport of Jaffa is Joppa, okay? And it's a seaport on the Mediterranean Sea, and it is part of Israel. And somewhere, God spoke in the life of Jonah and said, go, and Jonah ends up in Joppa. And God told him, I want you to go to Nineveh. Nineveh, now this map isn't the scale, but it's kind of give you an image of what's going on here. God called Jonah to go to Nineveh, which is about 550 miles northeast of Joppa. It is all by land, and he could get there. Just it would take him several weeks, but he would, you know, get a camel or two and some water, and he'd take off on his way. And about 550 miles, a couple weeks of traveling. And so it says God called him there to the city. It was the capital city of the Assyrian Empire. And like I said, it was known for just being there. I mean, they were sinful people, wicked, and they were far from God. But their wickedness really came out in the fact that they were incredibly violent. When they did wars and when they conquered people, they did things that were just horrendous. And God says, listen, I am seeing their sin. You need to go speak against it. But hear this. This is an act of a compassionate God who wants to do something about their sin. Not a God who's just going, I'm really ticked off and I just want to squish them. And we see this in the book, that God is pursuing the Ninevites. He's pursuing these people that Jonah doesn't like, and he wants to pursue them through Jonah. And so he says, verse 3, Jonah rose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went on board to go with them to Tarshish, away from the presence of the Lord. Jonah says, you know, I'm not real crazy about the plan to hop on a camel and head to Nineveh. I don't like those people. I don't really want them to be part of God's crowd. I'd rather for God just to hit them with a lightning bolt and be done with it. I don't want to go there. And so he says, I am going to Tarshish. I'm going to go to Joppa. I'm going to hop on a boat, and I'm going to head. And Tarshish, there's a couple different options as you kind of study the Old Testament language and things. But the best option is that Tarshish is actually a city on the tip, the southern tip of Spain. It's a seaport that is far, I mean, you know, in their mind, if I'm in a boat and I miss Tarshish, I'm going to fall off the face of the earth. That's it. It's as far away as he could go from where he was and from what God had called him to. He says, listen, I'm not going to Nineveh. I'm headed to Tarshish. I'm going to get on a boat and I'm going to head the opposite way away from the presence of the Lord, which is a really funny statement. Because wherever you run away from God, there he is. And that's what this story is all about. There's a passage in Psalm chapter 139 where the author is writing, and he's talking about kind of running away from God. And as he's talking about running away from God in Psalm chapter 139, it says this: "You know when I sit down and when I rise up, you discern my thoughts from afar. You search out my path, my lying down are acquainted with all my ways. Even before a word is on my tongue, behold, O Lord, you know it altogether. You hem me in behind and before me. You lay your hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high. I cannot attain it. Where shall I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you're there. If I make my bed in Sheol, the depths, the bottom of the earth, you are there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there your hand shall lead me and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is not bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you." This could be something that at the end of this chapter, Jonah could say himself. In fact, we'll find he says some things very similar to this. But Jonah is saying, I'm going to run from God. I'm going to get away from him. I know he's everywhere. I know he created everything. But there's got to be a corner of the earth somewhere where I can do what I want to do. And I don't have to deal with this God. And so that's kind of where Jonah is going to go. And what we're going to find in this story is three themes that I kind of want you to connect to. And the first one is this: the consequences of running. The fact that we as people, I mean, I am Jonah. But when I run, I'm going to run. When I try to run from God, I'm going to run into God. I'm going to experience his presence, and usually in ways that are not great for me. But that is an act of God's mercy, because if God leaves me to myself, God help me. I need him to be where I run, where I don't think he is. Does that make sense? I need him to be there. I don't want him to be there, but if he's not there, I am in trouble. But he is. And so God pursues Jonah, but the consequences of running. We're also going to see in the midst of this that nothing Jonah does is outside of God's control. God is in complete control of everything, and he orchestrates the events of Jonah's life to accomplish his purpose. Even Jonah's rebellion becomes an act of grace for other people. God uses his rebellion to do great things. And so God is in control, and you'll see this in the story. And I want you to understand, the same is true. You may be running from God this morning. You may have areas of your life that you're kind of hiding from him, and you think, I'm just distant. I know God wants me to do this, but I don't really want to be that person. And so you're kind of created your own little nook and cranny of life, and it's your little bubble of the world that is separate from God. God is orchestrating the events of your life to speak into your life and do the things he needs to do and accomplish through you what he wants. God is in control. And the third theme that I want you to see, and this is the big one, is that God pursues. In the midst of this, the real story of Jonah chapter 1 is that when Jonah is running from the presence of the Lord, God is already there pursuing Jonah. But we find out not only that, God is going to pursue a group of sailors through Jonah's rebellion. It's a beautiful story of how God pursues people. And I want you to know that if you're running, he is pursuing you. He loves you. He is passionate about you. He sent his son for you. And if you're running from God, if there's areas where you're just kind of distant from him, you need to understand even the events of your life can teach you that God is pursuing you. See, he always, this is key, God always is the one who takes the initiative. I am never going to take the initiative to pursue God, but God pursues me. It's a great story. And so how are you fleeing from God? How are you running? What are the ways that you are distant and found areas where God's spoken to you? I'm just going to share a few ways that I think people now, you know, not too many people are going to go, okay, God spoke to me. He spoke to me in Eureka. And so I'm going to hop on a boat and I'm going to go to, you know, Italy for a while because of that. Some people might do that. But I think there's a lot of other ways that we tend to run. Some people run through religion. I think this is a big one. That it is an easy way for me When I know God has spoken in my life and he wants to call me to repent of something or deal with issues in my life, that if I just go to church and do the religious thing, I feel like I'm appeasing God and I'm religious enough. He's got to be okay with that. I think there are a lot of people who have heard God speak into their lives, and they have found that the best way to hide from God is in church. If they're in church, nobody else is going to harass them, because by being in church, you've got to be okay, right? You go to church, you're a good person, you pray, you've got to be okay because you're doing the religious thing, right? And a lot of people, the best place to hide from God, to run from God, tends to be church. But that's not it. There's some people might run from God by running into relationships. You get connected either in a man-woman relationship that is just not healthy, or it might be a relationship with peers, and you just kind of, instead of running to God and listening to what he says, you kind of consume yourself with relationships. Some people will run from God to destructive behaviors. That's a big one. A lot of people will use drugs. They will, will drink a lot, will get, totally drunk, or they will run to other destructive relationships. And what started this is the fact that God began to speak in their life and they didn't want any part of it. And that leads to often depression. It leads to brokenness. And the only way they can master brokenness without returning to God is turning to substances and other things that they think will fill the hole. And that might be you. You might have turned to some kind of destructive behavior in your life, and that's kind of your way from running from God, and you're far from him. You're not sure how to make sense of it or what to do with that now. Well, Jonah's a great place for us to look. Some people turn to agnosticism and systems of belief that just denied the existence of the God who tried to speak to me. I don't know if you're familiar with a lady named Madeline Murray O'Hara, but she was a famous atheist who lived here in the United States, and she was the one who's court case in 1965, 66, whenever it was, she was the one who sued the United States government and said, we can't pray in schools. Now, this is not a statement about whether or not it's okay to pray in schools, but that's what she's known for. And here's what I want to tell you. Her life was filled with this rage and passion to just destroy God. But she had a son who became a follower of Jesus. And he said this. He said, listen, my mom is not an atheist primarily because she doesn't believe in God. My mom is an atheist primarily because she doesn't want a God who tells her what she can and can't do. See, there she is. She became a world-renowned atheist, but what was at the heart of it? Running from God. Running from a God who may have spoken into her life. And a lot of people will just all of a sudden deny faith and come up with a whole new system of beliefs, whether it's I don't believe in God or I just have all these other gods or whatever it is, instead of running to the true God and trusting him. That is a way of running from God. Some of these may connect with you, some of them may not, but I just want to tell you, most of us have a default mode of running too. My tendency is that when I get depressed and I feel far from God, I run to the refrigerator. I don't know what yours is. I'm being real honest with you about that. You know, that I run and I, that's the way for me to say, God, right now for the next 10 minutes, I'm my own guy. I don't really want to deal with you. And there's ice cream in the fridge or in the freezer, and that's what it is. Most of us have some kind of default mode that we do. Jonah's going to hop on a boat, and he's going to go away from the presence of the Lord, and that's what's going to happen in his life. So let's get into the story of Jonah as he hops on a boat. He's fleeing from the presence of the Lord, and it says he paid the fare. By the way, there's no wasted words in the Bible. If he hops on a boat, we ought to know, yeah, he paid the fare. But listen, no wasted words. The author is trying to let us know, hey, listen, when I run from God, there is a price to pay. I'm going to pay a fare. And Jonah paid the fare. The opposite end of this, when I run to God, you need to understand the price is already paid. Grace is God's mode. The price for everything of returning to God has already been paid. But for Jonah, he's going to hop on a boat, and he paid the fare. And in verse 4, it says, but the Lord hurled a great wind upon the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship threatened to break up. The mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his God, and they hurled the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten it for them. But Jonah had gone down into the inner part of the ship and had lain down and was fast asleep. So the captain came to him, what do you mean, you sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. So they hop in a boat. Jonah immediately runs down to the bottom of the ship. Was he depressed? It very well may have been that he was just a real bummed out dude and he knew he was running from God. He probably had to sell his house and sell everything he had, broke off our relationships and hopped on a boat to run from God. He was going as far away as he could. He probably was in his mind, I am never going to return here. Maybe total depression overtook him and he just kind of went down to sleep. Maybe it was just exhaustion. Maybe it was just this weird kind of contentment of, okay, anything but Nineveh. And there's almost this weird contentment. It doesn't really tell us why, but he goes down. He is crashed out in a deep sleep in the cargo hold underneath the ship. Meanwhile, the Bible tells us here that the Lord hurled. I love this. It's one of the key words in chapter 1 is the word hurled. You know, there's a lot of hurling going on in chapter 1 of the book of Jonah. And God hurls here. He hurls a storm. It's the idea he reared back, and he literally, it's an image of throwing. I've hurled on a ship a few times. I remember we were out on a boat one time, and I'd been excited. We went to the ocean, and I decided we are going to go deep sea fishing. I've saved up a little extra money. We're as a family going to hop on a boat, and I'm going to catch a big old fish, and we're going to flay it and eat it, and I'm going to feel like Macho Man. I am man. I catch fish. Hooray. And so we got the whole family on a boat, and we were in this harbor, and it felt kind of good, just this gentle sway. We got out to the ocean, and once we got in the ocean, this guy's trying to find fish, and there's this two motions, up and down, side to side, which don't work very well with me, I found out that day. Because I was out there in the ship, and we were out there about 10 minutes, and I'm like, ooh. And I'm trying to be real, I can't let anybody know that this is going on. And so you start clenching your teeth, and you deep breaths, and all of a sudden he found fish. My son is over there just having a good old time catching fish. My wife is catching fish. This girl that went with us, her name's Shannon, she's catching fish. I'm on the side of the boat leaving bait. I got really sick, and what I found out is this was happening in stereo because I was on this side of the boat doing it. My daughter was on this side of the boat. We just kind of clinging to the side, turning a lovely shade of green, trying to just hold on for a dear life. That's not the kind of hurling God is doing, but God is hurling a storm, and what happens in the lives of the sailors is that they experience a lot more terror than I did even in that, just kind of out open sea. These guys are sailors, okay? You got to picture this scene and just deal with it. You can't just read and go, oh, the mariners. I mean, here's Gilligan and Skipper on a ship with Jonah in the basement, and they have been on the water a lot. They get storms. They have been through situations where things were bad. I mean, you have got to see this scene as Forrest Gump in the hurricane. Do you get it? They are on this ship, and God sends. God is in control of this entire situation. God hurls a wind that creates a storm that creates absolute terror in these sailors. What does it take to get a group of sailors scared? They are terrified at this situation, and God has sent this storm, and they realize that their lives are now completely out of their own control. And it says they were afraid. And verse 5 says, the mariners were afraid, and each cried out to his gods. Not only do we have sailors that are in absolute terror, but now we've got sailors who found religion. I mean, these guys who are, this is a worldview of the ancient world that kind of saw things like this. They didn't really understand that there was one God. Their worldview was that there was kind of a God who was over everything. And so whatever town you were from, you had your God. And whatever job you had your God. And whatever, family background you had your God. And they may have three or four gods, and they had all these idols. And so they're in this thing, and the boat's throwing from side to side. The sails are ripping up. They're afraid for their lives. And these guys run. And now there's a guy, a guy with a Gilligan hat over here in the corner rubbing a Buddha, doll. And another guy's over here bowing and burning something to another deity. And they all have their own personal deities. And what's going on here is that there's a situation where all these guys are now just crying out to their God. And they're hoping that somebody will pick the right one. Because they're figuring that what has happened here, this storm showed up because somebody's God is mad and having a bad day. That was their view of the gods. that the gods are really most of the time kind of ticked off and angry with us, and it doesn't take much to push them over the edge, and it's not an act of God pursuing, it's an act of God just kind of wiping me out. And so I am, you know, if I can, you know, say the right mantra and do the right thing, one of us, if all of us kind of go get our idols and go to our gods and try to do the stuff that our God likes, one of us hopefully will work it out and make peace with that God and things will be okay. And what I want to tell you is that this is really a picture of our culture. We live in a culture right now where a lot of people, I mean, a lot of people are at home this morning, but most of them are not denying the existence of God. Most of them are okay and are very spiritual people. Statistics tell us that almost 4 out of 5 Americans pray at least once a week. We've encountered a lot of people where you try to talk to them about faith and about spirituality, and they have come up with a system of belief that is very bizarre and different from the Bible. But man, they're spiritual and they're passionate about praying, about doing spiritual things, about passing on some level of spirituality to their children. But it's just their own, they've created God in whatever image they want that God to be in. The challenge we as a church have is to live the gospel and be Jesus and point them to the one true God who can deal with their life issues. Because all these little gods that they are crying out to, none of them are going to answer the storm, and none of them are going to answer the greater life issue of knowing God. But these mariners, they got religion, man. They're picture this ship, man. It's tearing apart. The Bible tells us that we just read it that the ship is starting to bust up. And these mariners are terrified. They're calling out to their gods. And meanwhile, good old Jonah's downstairs having a nap. It's kind of weird. Because a lot of times in my life, when people are in the midst of storms that are raging, I'm somebody who knows the real God and I'm sleeping somewhere, just kind of content with my life. And what happens is that they run to him, they grab him. And it says, verse 6 says, this captain came to him, said, "What do you mean, you sleeper? Arise. Call out to your God." Now, he's just figuring he's just another guy with the same kind of system of beliefs, same kind of worldview, and maybe your God is the one, and we haven't covered that God yet. Where, you know, what's your life situation? Where are you from? Those sort of things. Call out to your God, and perhaps the God will give a thought to us that we may not perish. He said, man, we need to add one more person because we're all doing it. We're all doing the spiritual thing. It is not working in our life right now. Why don't you call on yours? Because maybe that's the one. And it's amazing. Once again, this is a story, but it is a divine story where God has spoken into this. I want you to notice the words of the captain. He says, "Arise and call." Look at verse 1 again. It says, "The word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and call.'" Jonah's passed out. Here comes this captain's ship, and he kicks his foot. And the first two words out of this captain's mouth are the two words that God had said to Jonah: "This is what I want you to do. Rise and call on your God, because we're in a world of hurt here, man. We are in trouble. Maybe you can do something about this." Verse 7, it says, "And they said to one another, 'Come, let us cast lots that we may know on whose account this evil has come upon us.'" Now, let me note what verse 7 doesn't say. Verse 7 does not say, Jonah came to the top of the boat and told them all about God and the real God and told them that this was all his fault. And it says, man, he got to the top of the boat and he's just kind of there, and the sailors are now setting up a craps game. I mean, literally, this is what's going on. You got to picture this. They are freaked out. They don't know what to do. Their lives are out of control. They figure some God is upset at them, and they've got to figure out what's causing this. And so they set up a table and pull out dice, and they're starting to roll dice. And these dice, basically, they would have on it, you know, either if it was 6-sided or whatever, they would have equal number of dark and light sides. And if it came up with 2 darks, that meant no. If it came up with 2 lights, yes. And if it came up with 1 light and 1 dark, try it again. And in the ancient world, this is often how they would do things. This is actually found a lot in the Bible. And the Bible actually teaches us that even God's hand is in these things. Proverbs 16:33 says this, "The lot is cast into the lap, but every decision is from the Lord." The lot is this dice game, man. There, he's saying, listen, you may roll the dice, but ultimately God is even in control of those decisions. And so these sailors who worship all these gods have set up this table. You know, they're rolling dice. Now, if you've ever seen the Jonah movie, and if you haven't, especially if you have kids, I would suggest it would be worth your time to go rent the VeggieTales Jonah movie. Yes, it is about vegetables, but it's worth it. It's funny. And they really do a good job with this story. In their version of it, though, they sit down and they play Go Fish, which is actually pretty funny because they're there with all the cards, you know, playing Go Fish with the storm going around. But anyway, these sailors are out here rolling dice. And every time, you know, somebody, daddy needs a new pair of shoes. And, you know, he's rolling the dice. And every sailor, when it's his turn, it's like, all right, John over here. Let's see if it's him. Shh. A white in the dark. Oh, please don't let me be. Please. You know, you can see the terror of not only am I afraid, but now I don't want to be the cause of this. And they're rolling these dice. And every guy, as it comes to him, it comes up with two blacks. Every guy, boom, two blacks, two blacks. All right, one and one. Let's try it again. Two blacks. And they're like, man, we've never seen anything like this before where, you know, it's just not working for anybody. And it says finally they came to Jonah. Boom, they cast a lot, and the lot fell on Jonah. Boom. God had exposed him. God had shown all of them, yeah, he's the dude. He is the one I'm pursuing right now. He is the one who is disobeying me. He's the one who's running from God. I mean, in my life, I am like this so much. Where I think when I run from God, I can just run in my quiet little world and I'm not affecting anybody. It's not going to be, this is my life. It's not going to hurt anybody. And Jonah thought that. And his running now had put the lives of every person on this ship in peril. And now God had exposed him. I had a pastor friend who was telling about this. And there were two people, both of them church-going people, claimed to be followers of Jesus, who both of them had families. And the man and the woman started having an affair. And they were sleeping together, and it was painful. And he sat them down. And he said, listen, what is going on? And both of them kind of had this attitude. Listen, this is my life. It's not affecting anybody else. And I just, this is what we want right now. We just want to be happy. And he looked at him, and he said, listen, that stuff is baloney, because I want to tell you that up to this point now, I have already sat down and counseled with 52 different people whose lives in some way are being affected and even destroyed by this decision. We never run from God and just take our own selves down and that's it. It always affects other people. And God, through the casting of lots, through a dice game, had pointed out, hey, this is the guy. This is the dude. And so this is what goes on. It says they cast lots, verse 7 and verse 8. Then they said to him, tell us, on whose account this evil has come upon us? What is your occupation? Where do you come from? And what is your country? And of what people are you? Now, that seems like a bunch of random questions. But listen, these are all religious questions. They are all. Every one of these is saying, which set of gods did you make mad? Which set of gods are angry with you and trying to take us out because of you? Which set of gods? What's your country? What's your town? What's your people? What's your occupation? Who are you? And which spiritual set do we need to start paying homage to? Which spiritual set do we all, we need to all go put our little Buddha down and grab your idols and rub their bellies and pray to that God? What do we need to do now? And Jonah, verse 9, he said to them, I am a Hebrew. I fear the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land. Jonah's response is amazing because here's the deal. Jonah has great theology. Jonah says, listen, forget about all those other gods. I fear the Lord, the God of heaven who made all of this. You guys believe in gods who are just kind of over a section. You don't really get the fact that there's a creator behind all and that controls all. I fear the Lord. But the wording also is not random. They had been seeking after their gods. Now I'm going to do a little Hebrew stuff with you because you got to get what's going on. In the Bible, we just talk about, I mean, as English-speaking people, we just talk about God. And that's kind of our word, to talk about God. But Hebrew people didn't talk about God. They had a pantheon of words that referred to him, and every word kind of referred to aspects of his character and his nature. And they talked about God more about talking about what he's like than just a generic God. Two of those words, one is Elohim. The word Elohim is actually the word that is used as the generic gods, and it's just kind of the great one, the big kahuna. You know, I mean, that's kind of what Elohim is. And all through this passage, they have been saying, cry out to your Elohim, cry out. We need to find which Elohim's upset. We need to figure out Elohim, you know, the big kahuna, which big kahuna's kind of upset. And Jonah says, I worship, and the word here is Yahweh. It is a word that goes all the way back to Genesis chapter 3, and then we find really in Exodus chapter 3, when a guy named Moses is talking to God, and he says, God, who are you? And God's answer is, I am who I am. I am the great I am. I am the self-sustaining, self-existent one that runs this universe. I don't need anything to do anything for me. I do it all. I am it. But then as he goes on in the Bible, this becomes the covenant name for God with his people, which means this, that God gave this name to his people to say, even though I am the self-existent one, I am now in a relationship with you. Jonah says, you're chasing after Elohims. I want you to know I serve the only God, and I actually have a relationship with him. He is a relational God who pours himself into people. I serve the Lord, the creator of all that is. He has right theology, but that theology somehow is not sunken into his heart. Is it important for us to have good theology as a church? Absolutely. Is that enough? Never. Because right theology always ought to turn into right practice. And if our theology is right and our practice is right, we're going to see God as ascending God. All right? And so he says, listen, I serve the God, the maker of heaven and earth. Verse 10. It says, then the men were exceedingly afraid and said to him, what is this that you have done? For the men knew that he was fleeing from the Lord. Now, just a few minutes ago, they were afraid of waves. Now they are afraid of Jonah. There is a progression here. This is a cool story. These guys are afraid of waves. Now they're afraid of Jonah, and they say, what have you done? Because they knew that he was running from God. Verse 11, then they said to him, what shall we do that the sea may quiet down for us? For the sea grew more and more tempestuous. And he said to them, pick me up and hurl me. There's the word again. Hurl me into the sea. Then the sea will quiet down for you. For I know it is because of me that this great tempest has come upon you. He says, listen, this is about me and God. I disobeyed. I'm the cause. There's no rubbing bellies and, you know, throwing salt over your shoulder and, you know, saying mantras. The only way this is going to be solved is if God is after me, and in his mind, God is after me to take my life. We're going to find out that's not why God was after him. God was pursuing Jonah. But he says the only way to solve this is to throw me into the sea. Verse 13, nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to the dry land, but they could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous against them. It's amazing in this story, actually all through the story, that the people who don't believe in God are the nice ones. And do you realize that that actually is one of the big issues in our culture about the church and the people who claim to follow God? Is that people who are far from God and who have all kinds of weird lifestyles are actually pretty nice people. But Christians are the honorary ones who are just mean. My sister worked in a restaurant for years. She used to tell me, I hate Sundays. What? She said, Sunday about 11:45, the Christians start showing up. She said, they'll come into my restaurant. My sister's a follower of Jesus, okay? They'll come into my restaurant. They're mean. They don't drink, so they're not going to, you know, they're not going to build up a huge tab. They are short with every waitress. They expect to have the best service, and they leave like a 10% tip and a tract. And most of the people I work with hate Sunday afternoon because they know I'm going to work hard, people are going to whine and complain, and I'm going to get nothing out of it. She said, I love weekend nights when all the party crowd, the crazy people, they come in, they're happy, they're having a good time, they drink a lot, and they tip me a lot of money. It shouldn't be that way. Christians ought to be the first ones to say good job and to tip the most. But it's not that way in our culture. It's amazing. We found in the book of Jonah that with their lives in peril, they're going to try to row to shore. But Jonah was asleep in the belly of the ship when their lives were at stake. We go on. Nevertheless, the men rowed hard to get back to dry land. They could not, for the sea grew more and more tempestuous. Therefore, they called out to the Lord, O Lord, let us not perish for this man's life and lay on us innocent blood for you. O Lord, have done as it pleased you. So they picked up Jonah and hurled him into the sea, and the sea ceased from raging. Then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows. Now here's what happens. They're rowing. They can't get it. We're not getting to shore. This storm is not going to let us get there. And so they finally say, man, if that's what you say. And they pray. They said, all right, the God, Jehovah, Yahweh, the covenant God that this guy knows, we're going to do what he says, but please don't make us guilty for his life. Then they pitch him overboard. Jonah hits the water. He's going down. And that's kind of where we leave him in this story right now. But he hits the water, and as soon as they do that, the storm stops. Remember, they were afraid of waves. Then they were afraid of Jonah. Verse 16 says, these men greatly feared the Lord. It says they went and made sacrifices. This is actually a reference to the fact that they probably headed back to Joppa and headed to Jerusalem to the temple where God's people were worshiping. And they went there and they had sacrifices that dealt with their sin. And they made a commitment, you now are our God. Crazy. This dude runs and God is pursuing him. But somehow through his running, he pursues these sailors. And someday in the streets of heaven, these dudes on this ship are going to be there. Doesn't make sense, but it's true. But Jonah is in a pickle because now he is sinking. Verse 17. I'm just going to kind of touch on this. We're going to really deal with this next week. And the Lord appointed a great fish to swallow up Jonah. Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights. But the one question I do want to ask you is this. When did God appoint the fish? Because if you think God appointed a fish, like, oh my gosh, Jonah's in the water. What do I do now? Oh, fish, go! You're missing the point. If you really understand the Bible, he appointed the fish before the foundation of the world. And that fish had to be born and become a freak of nature somehow and some kind of miraculous, crazy sea creature that's been swimming around the ocean who just happened to be beneath a boat in a storm on this day. And see, what I want you to understand with this is that God is pursuing Jonah. And nothing Jonah did caught God off guard, and God already had the provision for Jonah's rebellion before Jonah rebelled. And this is the story of the Bible. God is pursuing you. You and I run from God every day. We have our own Joppa where we have a choice. God's way, my way. Do I follow what God's calling me to do, or do I get religious, or do I get where I just am agnostic, and I get to my Joppa, and I've got these life situations where I know what God's saying, I don't want to do it, and I run. And I fall into brokenness, and I fall into the depths, and there God is. Because the Bible teaches us that before I ever made those decisions, in fact, before Adam and Eve ever made those decisions, God already knew that he was ascending God who would send his son, and the cross would be the answer. The cross in the Bible is not an afterthought on how God's going to deal with our sin. The cross is the center of the Bible that tells us God already knew he was going to deal. He had a provision before I left, before I hopped on a boat, before I headed to Tarshish. And that's kind of where we're at. You know, I mean, Jonah has his Joppa. Jonah gets there and has a decision. He decides, I'm hopping on a boat, paying the fare, and I'm going to Tarshish. But before Jonah ever got on the boat, God already had a provision. And he is on this boat, and what takes place is that God is there taking care of him. But you may be here today, and that's kind of where you're at. You're like, dude, I'm already on that boat, and I've already experienced the storms of life. Well, how do you deal with that? And that's kind of the application I want to leave with you this morning, is that God is a God of second chances. He does provide you a way. Come on out, band. God does provide you a way to do that. And we're going to kind of give you a visual to help out with that this morning, all right? Hey, I don't know where you are this morning. My guess is most of us have some area where we're running, and some of us in here may be really far from God. We've heard him speak. We're not sure what to do with it. And we're out in the middle of an ocean where there's a lot of storms. I just want to tell you that God already has the provision. The cross is the provision. And he can make sense of this stuff and make your life work. We're going to find as we go in Jonah that God is unbelievable with him. He is pursuing you. We kind of did something that is kind of interesting, different. We gave you a map this morning. It's a treasure map. This is not a Bible map, okay? Do not look at it and go, hey, this looks just like the Mediterranean Sea. It doesn't. That's okay. It's more of a treasure map because we actually believe Jesus is the treasure. And maybe there's an area of your life as you kind of go through this week, you can throw this on a table and just open the Bible and pray and say, God, I know that I was here at my Joppa, and I went the other way, and you were calling me to something in my life, and that was kind of like Nineveh. I headed for Tarshish. Help me find the provision and trust you. And just use that as kind of a visual. You may write on it like Karis did this morning. I hope you can read all the stuff up here. If not, it's got some great stuff. Come down after the service and just kind of see what she wrote. And use your map. You may write on it, or you just may use it as a visual, as a reminder that God is pursuing you and you can trust him. And even if the storm is raging pretty hard, he's not out to get you. He's pursuing you because he loves you, and it's an act of his grace. I'm going to pray. We're going to worship that God. We're going to sing about him. We're going to sing to him. We're going to celebrate who he is. We're going to take up an offering because for those who are part of Genesis, this is our way of giving back. If you're a guest, the offering, we don't want you or ask you to give anything. This gift is our, this service is our gift to you. But we just want to celebrate Jesus for a little while and celebrate the God who pursued us even before we started running. Lord, I praise you and I honor you. I just pray that you'll speak to us even as we sing and celebrate and worship. In your name I pray. Amen.